All right. Okay, shalom. Let's get started. We're going to learn tonight that didn't make any sense.
Okay. For the recording.
All right, shalom. We're going to continue now with our shirim for Orchot Tzadikim. This is now our eighth time learning together. We are on chapters 13 and 14, Ratzon and Kina. Tonight, we're actually going to mix it up. Usually, we either look at a combination of the two midos, because when it's very clearly a spectrum, or we'll go chronologically, Ratzon and then Kina. Tonight, we're actually going to look at Kina first. We're just going to look at it first. We're not going to necessarily give a particularly compelling reason for it. At first, I was like, oh, well, Kina's going to take longer because there's more to it. But now Ratzon might end up taking a while as well. But we're going to look at them together. They definitely do overlap, and we're going to try and appreciate how they overlap, why these are sort of the two complementary midos, but they don't overlap in the same way that some of our previous ones do. So we're going to look at Kina and then Ratzon and then figure out how they all come together. And so, as usual, we want to thank Neely, we want to thank Ms. Emma Katz, and even though we're not there, the Levin's Intent for housing us, and let's begin. We start with one of my favorite pieces in Ali Shor. Are we familiar with Ali Shor? I think we've actually learned Ali Shor in various contexts together, but Ravobi was one of the previous centuries, greatest Baalei Musar, a student of Rabbi Yochum Levavitch Memir, a Baal Tshuva, probably one of the very few Gedolim who's a genuine Baal Tshuva, like when he was 13 years old. He might have even been in college. But a real a Baal Tshuva and an extraordinarily insightful person. Psychologists have frequently affirmed that his insights are parallel to that of the most insightful people who work in counseling. And so whenever we see Ravobi point something out, we gotta pay a lot of attention to it. And so his first volume is focused on Yeshiva Bachrim. Now, none of us are officially Yeshiva Bachrim, but we're not so different. If you're a little bit thoughtful, you can figure out how the struggles of someone in Yeshiva can apply to each and every one of us. And so his specific language is going to be about a guy learning in yeshiva, but the messaging applies to all of us. And we're going to look at this right now. He starts and says, Yididi Hayakar. It's a letter from one of his students. My dear, Mama Orani Margisha Otkais Tsarcha Al Halimu Che'enoholich. I feel the pain that your learning's not going well. Kal Shilchali Yisrachis Bashir, Imachav Rusos, Eno Mishtava. You can't pay attention so well. Well, during the shiurim, there are so many people and you prefer to have just, little one-on-ones, but then when you're one-on-one, that's not going well either. And you're not doing so well. And so maybe for us, it's not in the context of learning. Maybe when it comes to coming to davening, maybe when it's coming to the interactions we have with our families, maybe it's when it comes to whatever work or schooling that we are trying to deal with. And it's not specifically when it comes to the very, very explicit Talmud Torah. This feeling of enoholich, of it's not going, can apply to any area of our lives. So we can imagine, what it's like when things aren't going right, when it's not going well. And in the next paragraph, we say, Ulam ata, Yosem imash ata roa umarich es koko sichlecha, more than what you're appreciating of your own abilities, in this context, your intellectual capacity as a ben Torah, ata roa kishronos kaverka. When you're in yeshiva, you're seeing everyone else's abilities. The etzel atzmecha ata roa rak she'enlecha. You're just seeing that relative to everyone else, you're not actually so impressive. You're not doing so well. Mashiach l'acherim, what everyone else has. Alimun hamashutaf, what do we call alimun hamashutaf? Kavusa. You're learning with someone and you're interacting with them. You're working in a team. You're doing a group project. And you're so acutely aware, you're studying together for a big test. You're very, very aware that they know more than you do. And you're not doing as well. So doch v'chefos yom yom es kvulos eila. Every day you're realizing the boundaries of what you're able to do. And so you're getting more and more aware. We'll jump down one line, fourth word in line. Aval yom yom, reita yosef yosef, you see even more, kishrona shel acharim, the talents of others, migrao seitzlecha, and it makes you feel worse about your kokos. And then one day, uviyom echad, nismala hasa, the straw breaks the camel's back effectively. Hanachash ba'atzmacha ki ein lecha klum. You feel like you got nothing. Lo kishron lo hatzlacha lo tikva rak asivas koach atzvus tsar. You're having a rough day. You feel like you're just full of pain. You're sad. You got nothing. You're spent. It's almost poetic. And sad. And then Rav Elwi says something, you know, this feeling of looking around it and seeing that everyone else is so much better than you, is so much more accomplished than you are. He says that that feeling has a name, and it's a name that I would never have imagined until I learned this piece. He says, Hargasha Zu, this feeling, Nikres Kina. It's called jealousy. It's called envy. And that actually should make you feel better. Everyone who's young, everyone who is still in the process of growing, suffers from jealousy in some, one way, shape, or form. Ben yeshiva, for sure, someone who's in yeshiva. Because in yeshiva, it's not just, oh, you know, everyone here is here trying to learn. Everyone is here trying to achieve a degree, but it's your performance that's really the key there. It's not, oh, if you got a degree and I get a degree, if you finish the project, I finish the project, then great. It's in yeshiva, you really want to be able to show your best work. And if I'm not able to do that, I'm not going to feel good about myself. And so, just skipping to the last paragraph, we say, Habor Yisparach in a rotza. God does not want Shekol b'nei Adam yistakla b'torah b'oso mabat, that everyone looks at the Torah the same way. V'yolamdu b'oso derech, and they learn the same way. V'yavinu oso davar, and they understand it the same way. Ela kol echad b'gisha shelo. Everyone should understand it the way that he or she is supposed to understand it. Specifically the way that you are supposed to appreciate and understand the Torah you're learning, the project you're working on, the mitzvah you're performing, the davening that you're trying to connect to. The Az, Klum Yachad Yiskel Torah Shlema. And there, sorry, Kulam Yachad. Everyone together in their different ways of connecting to Torah, then they're going to be able to appreciate and really see the fullness of Torah, not just, you know, the one intellectual approach. When it comes to Torah, we can appreciate that, you know, there are different ways of understanding and feeling Torah and expressing that. But it's not just in the context of Torah. In any limud, it's always going to be the case that, well, it's always going to be the case. Oh, I don't like that. Never mind. I'm removing our spotlight. It's always going to be the case that different skill sets are always going to play differently. When the kollel does orientation, they do this activity where everyone splits up into four different directions, and the directions don't really make a difference, but it's basically, you know, who's like more of a go-getter, who's going to like run in charge, who's going to be focused on details, who's going to sort of keep the big picture in mind, who's going to make sure everyone's feeling involved and appreciating that you need a diverse team. But when you don't necessarily appreciate that, you know, every single person has a koach, and you just think about the fact that, well, right now, we're all trying to do one thing. Right now, we're in school, and really the goal is academic accomplishment. And I'm not academically accomplishing as much as she is. And so I start to feel bad. That's not just you having a low self-esteem. That's actually called kina. That's called jealousy. And that's what the Yorcha Sadikim says in paragraph 6. Again, we always use the Sefaria edition just because it's the easiest one for us to use. But it says in Surah 6 that hakina ba'a migrius hanefesh. You end up feeling jealous because you feel bad about yourself, because you're looking around at everyone else and saying, they're better than me, and now I'm going to, and I feel badly about it. And so the first step in appreciating what kin is and how to avoid this terrible mito, which we'll come to talk about in a minute, is to recognize that just because someone's better at something than I am doesn't necessarily mean that it means that I'm bad at it. It doesn't mean that I'm supposed to be good at it. I mean, the story from Naftali Amsterdam, it's a similar story with Zusha, but we're going to tell the Naftali Amsterdam story, where he's one of the prime students of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and he's talking to his Rebbe, and he says, Rebbe, I got a problem, because I feel like I'm not really living up to my potential in Avodas Hashem, and I just need a few things. If I had the brain of the Shagas Aryeh, the Shagas Aryeh was known to be one of the sharpest minds in all of Europe, and if I had the brains of the Shagas Aryeh, if I had the neshama of the Yisod V'Shor Shavoda, and then I'd be able to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And Yisrael Salanter basically says, no, Naftali, it's not like that at all. God wants you to serve him with your kokos, not if you were as great as. No, it's not that there's a measure, there's no bar that God wants you to arrive at. God just wants you to serve him in whatever way you can, in whatever capacity you're able in your current state, by Asher Husham, effectively. And so with that framework for Kena, let's actually jump in and try and understand what KIN is all about, how it operates, how we should be interacting with it. And so,
can I ask a question? Please. Just one thing I didn't see in the text, and I was wondering where I missed it, where you said, or I misheard, that Rebobi says that the reason he's feeling kinna is because he's young and he's growing. Is that related? Did you lose me?
No. I mean, a tiny bit, but no, I've still got you. Okay. So he says in the second to last paragraph, Hargasha zu nikres kinna, this feeling is jealousy. V'tehezos nechamtecha, and this actually should be a comfort for you, Yedidi, my dear. He called Sa'ir Sovel Mikina, because everyone who's young suffers from jealousy. So he doesn't say explicitly, meaning when you're growing, you're going to be more inclined toward kinna, but being young by nature it means that you're in a growth process. So admittedly, I'm inferring, although I was told by Rabbi Phil Karish of Chicago, that whenever you learn a Ravobi, you have to learn it like a Tosfos. You have to read in between the lines. He's not going to say every single detail. You know, one of the other svarim we're going to look at tonight is the Olam Hamidos. The Olam Hamidos, Rabbi Moshe Don Kesterbaum, it came out like 10 years ago. He writes out everything. There's no reading between the lines. He tells you explicitly what he wants you to know. Ali Shore is not quite as explicit. And so he doesn't say growing, but I'm inferring that anytime a tzair is doing something, anytime a young person is doing something, it's because they're in a growth stage.
Well, even in the next line, doesn't he elaborate?
Right, exactly.
Does this then apply to also those who are not young by age, but young in the desire to grow?
Right, maybe that's actually
even
specifically
an old
why.
Person can also feel this, right?
Yeah. So this is specifically why I added it, because it's not a question of immaturity, of, oh, you're 16, oh, you're 20, and that's why you feel that way. It's you're young and you don't feel accomplished. There are plenty
I thought you were saying that it's not a feeling of immaturity, and the reason it's a comfort is because you should know this kinna is coming from the best of places. It's
right,
coming
yes,
from the desire to grow and connect.
For sure. But it's when you're feeling like you're growing, when you feel established, when you're confident in your ability, top surgeons, not even top surgeons, experienced surgeons, someone who's been doing surgery for 30 years, someone might ask a question on what they did in surgery. And they're welcome to ask questions, but it's not an attack on who I am as a surgeon. Maybe I even made a mistake, but I'm not trying to develop my competence as surgery. I know I'm competent. I've been successfully performing surgery for 30 years. But when I'm 27 and learning how to do surgery, then an attack, then a question or a comparison to my surgery versus someone else's, that feels much more like an attack because I'm not as secure in my ability to do it. So anyone growing, if someone's growing at 50 or at 75, they might still feel this way depending on the area that they're trying to grow in. But someone who's been established, who feels established, is not likely to feel down because of other people's success, because they don't need that kind of validation. Look,
they're not trying to develop their sense of self at that point. They're just trying to refine it, but it's already been developed.
Right, and it's not just the global sense of self, but it's the sense of self in this specific area, in piano playing. When you're trying to develop in piano playing, and you see someone with the same level of experience as you, but doing so much more, doing so much better, that could be demoralizing or debilitating. And that, I think, is what he's getting at. Clear?
Thank you. Yes.
Awesome. This is how we learn. We got to clarify. We're not going to see the rest of paragraph 6 now. We're going to actually look at it later. Going on to definitions, effectively, Orchid Zadikim tells us that no one's free from kinna. We're switching off between envy and jealousy, but everyone experiences kinna in one way, shape, or form. And effectively, it's the most basic, the most the baseline understanding is what we see in line. Is when someone else has something, you say, "Oh, I want that." But look, we're not like little people. We're not children. It's not that it rarely happens to us that we see someone else get a new iPhone. We see someone else get this toy or that toy, this thing and that thing, and you think, "Oh, they want it now. I want it." And all of a sudden, you're overcome with jealousy. We've got a larger worldview than that, so we don't need to start. We can sort of jump past that base level of jealousy. And maybe take a little bit more. An appreciation that our author points out in the third paragraph for kinna that says, top of page 2. Misha Amida Hazos Minska Barasalov, someone who is feeling kina, humagunama od. It's disgusting, it's despicable, it's terrible. Kina kinama viola de chimud, because it leads a person into lust, and ikisha adam eno no sin is libo umakanama shayesh biyad acherim as eno chomid. But when you're not paying attention to what another person has, I bolded the wrong thing on top, I apologize. When you're not paying attention to what a person has, you're not going to worry so much. The easiest and most basic way to make sure that you're not going to be jealous of someone else is to just not care what they're up to, not care what they're doing. And that, to some extent, that's what Ravolbi's pointing out at the very, very end of his point. And like this Rav Naftali Amsterdam story with Arisa Salanter. It's not, if I were as great as her, if I had her ability, her capacity, then I would be able to accomplish. But Orcha Sadikim says it, and Ravolbi says it, and everyone says it, that you don't worry so much about what's going on with someone else. You just worry about what's going on with you. Then you're not going to feel that kina. Kina is not going to be such a problem in your life. But now we get a little bit in Yana Dioma. Not quite, because we're officially in Parshas Beshalach, but we'll get to Yisro soon enough. And so we're going to prepare for a little bit, because the Orcha Tzadikim says in paragraph 13, Lachain Yisrachik min hakino min hachemda, stay far away from jealousy and from a desire for other people's things. And you shouldn't want, you shouldn't covet, I think is our arts girl definition, that which is in someone else's hand. And so you shouldn't say, I want the thing that my friend has, and I'll give her the money for it, I'll buy it from her. If she doesn't want to sell that to you, as usher, so you're not allowed to take it from her. Yes, you give her the money. You could offer her a ton. When the iPhone 10 came out, which iPhone 10 / iPhone X, it was a limited release. Not everyone is able to get it. And the idea was that when iPhones first came out, it was kind of like an elitist toy that people could have. Then all of a sudden, everyone had an iPhone. It wasn't a big deal anymore. So the idea behind the iPhone 10 was that they were going to make it absurdly expensive, literally $1,000 for a cell phone, and that not everyone could have access to it, and then it would become a status symbol. Then they were like, that was a stupid idea. Why would we tell people they shouldn't buy our phones and they could let everyone have it? Well, let's say in that first week, you want to be one of the early adopters, you want the iPhone 10, and you couldn't get it, but your friend does. If you offer her $1,200 for it, but she didn't really want to give it up, but she can't say no to $1,200, she's getting so much more. If you kind of force her to it, then you're violating an Isser, you're violating one of the Aseres HaDibros, you're violating the Isser of Lo Sachmod. And let's explore Lo Sachmod a tiny bit more, even though it's not necessarily focused direct, even though it's a jump from our topic. We've got a little picture of the Aseres HaDibros, and I'm sure we're familiar with this Dvar Torah, the general Dvar Torah, that the two sides of the Dibros connect. Anokhi Hashem Lakaka connects to Lo Tirtzach. So some of those connections are obvious, but what's the connection between Kivud Av V'Aim and Lo Sachmod? Honor your parents and don't covet.
Your parents, and your parents may have taught you well enough that you'll understand that whatever you were given, you were meant to have, and whatever you aren't is also good.
So I think exactly what Mary Mifka is saying, but we can even take it one step further. Not just if you're honoring your parents and if they're educating you well, but there are people, and it's not so crazy, but there are people who are jealous of someone else's parents. Her parents are either way more chill than my parents are, or they're way more supportive than my parents are, or they're way frumer than my parents are. Whatever the reason why someone might like their friend's parents more than their parents. Having just had a son, he's a little over 2 months now, he looks a lot like me. I don't see it as much as everyone else, but the whole family says that he looks just like me. And we know it's not a chiddush to say that children are a refraction of their parents to some extent. There's some sort of offshoot. There's some midah that every parent has that's manifest in their children in one way, shape, or form. Maybe in the positive, sometimes in the inverse, but it's always going to be there. And so who my parents are really makes up who I am. And so if someone's jealous of someone's parents, someone's jealous of anything really, but particularly someone's parents, effectively they're saying that I think God messed up. I think that I'm not supposed to have this life. I'm not supposed to be here. I'm not supposed to live here. I'm not supposed to have gone to the school I went to. I'm not supposed to have the cousins. You know, their Seder is, you know, so elaborate and exciting. And my Seder is always like, you know, with these cousins who aren't so into it. And we spend the whole time bickering. And before we even make Kiddush, this might be a true story. And, you know, my uncle, like, you know, declares we better be done in an hour. If someone feels upset about that, then and says, I wish I was in a different family, effectively what they're saying is that I wish I was different, that there's an issue inherently with me, because your family, the Kivud Avim, the parents you're coming from, literally is the makeup of who you are. And so Lo Sachmod starts out, the Ibn Ezra has the explanation in the Pesukim there in Shmos, that Lo Sachmod is, you know, how are you supposed to think? That, you know, the peasant never looks at the prince, the princess, but I guess we could say prince, never looks at you know, the Hollywood star and says, oh, one day they're going to marry me. The example I heard Rabbi Leibowitz give was that, like, no, yeshiva guy is ever, like, looking at some, like, you know, Hollywood celebrity and saying, oh, one day, like, I'm going to marry her. Like, she's going to convert for me, and, like, we're going to still live in the Five Towns, and it's going to be a beautiful, it's not going to happen. And no one thinks like that. There's no chemda there because, like, you know, it's so far removed. And so Ibn Ezra says that every object of someone else, every experience that someone else has that you don't have should be viewed the same way. That it's so far off, it can never possibly happen. And so Lo Sachmod connects to Kivud Avim, because Kivud Avim is the most clear representation of you have exactly what you're supposed to have. You don't have anything else. And what someone else has is not what you're supposed to have. And therefore, there's no reason, there's no need to covet. It doesn't make any sense to want something from someone else. To be jealous of someone else is totally illogical, because you're effectively uprooting the nature of who you are. And I think we've actually quoted the past 2 weeks, both when it came to Simcha and when it came to Kaas, that Rav Levi Yitzchak of Bar Ditch was walking with his Hasidim, and he stops, and they stop, and he asks his Hasidim, if I were God, what would I do right now? They're like, what, Rabbi? What would you do if you were God right now? And he says, exactly what he's doing. You think I'm smarter than he is? But anytime we're jealous, it's effectively saying that we think they're smarter than God. I think that's the third time I've said it. We'll see. Maybe I won't mention again next week. But he takes it one step further, because in paragraph 15.
Wait, Rabbi Zachar?
Huh?
Maybe you were going to say this, but I feel like there's one point that, like, tell me if this is coming up and we just haven't addressed it yet. But how is this fair if one of the emotions that, two of the emotions I can think of that Rabbi Wolbe, like, pointed out are atzvas and sa'ar? What if a person isn't coming from a place of, like, Hashem, you don't know what you're doing, but how about, like, from the place of, like, I just feel pain? Like, it's not coming from, like, you know, like, that, like, God made a mistake. It's coming from the point of, like, God, I'm in a lot of pain right now, and therefore I'm jealous.
All right. Well, I think we will get to that, and if not, then we'll jump in. But, well, I think we're gonna be okay. But Shkayach. All right. So in Tesvav, just pointing out one other element of the evils, I guess you could say, of Kina, that Kamaros, Tlius Bekina. How terrible is those who are dependent on jealousy? Because we say the Nakash Hakadmoni is kind of Adam Harishon. The very first sin that ever existed was a result of Kina, of jealousy. The Garam Misa Liolam, it brought death to the world. And you know, the snake had to live on its stomach, and then he lists all the different people that messed up throughout parts of Tanakh because of jealousy, whether it's Cain or Korach or Bilam or Doeg or Achitofel or Gehazi or Adonia or Avshalom or Uzziahu, all basically because they wanted something that wasn't theirs. And then points out something very important, building on what we were just discussing. Mikol Eila in the bold, Yulamir Adam Sheyifrosh Minakina Uminachemda. Based on all these examples, we see how important it is to stay away from jealousy. Ki afilu masha biyado eno shelo. Because even the things that you have in your house, the things that are in your room right now, they're not really yours. Ki machor bavenenu, because they could be gone tomorrow. Umayoilo sheino shelo. So if none of this really belongs to you, it all really belongs to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, then, like, who are we kidding? Like, you want what they have? What they have doesn't make, is it going to last necessarily? And when, especially in like the world today where we see that fortunes can just fall immediately. Stock markets can just crash. It's happened in our lives. I think it's so much easier for us to appreciate that, like, yeah, like none of these possessions are really so clear, so concrete that I need to worry so much about it. And so maybe Losaku, like, don't cover what someone else has, because like none of it's really ours. A Kaddish Baruch Hu owns it all. And with that, we're gonna skip this next one. That it just points out that one of the unfortunate things about jealousy is that it never stops, because you're never gonna really get what you want. There's always gonna be someone else who has something more than you, and so Kenna will just continue forever. And this is a mashal we have to learn. I learned this in middle school and I still remember it with our Daniel Price. And this is in Yud Daled 14, middle of page, what is it, 3? Mashal. Let's make a parable. There was a guy who was jealous, and there was basically two guys who were jealous that bumped into a king. Amar lahem amelach, echad mehem yishal davar mimeni v'yinatein lo. One of you ask me for something, and I'll give it to you. Ulachavero b'kiflayim. But the other one, I'm going to give double. If you ask me for $100, I'm going to give you 100 and your friend 200. You ask me for a car, I'm going to give you a car and your friend two cars. Hakanai lo ratzel lishol tchila she hayimiskana im yinatein lachaver b'kiflayim. And so the jealous person's not interested in asking for that, because then their friend's going to get double. So dachak hakol made as hakanai lishol she'al nikanar lo ayin echas lachaver shtayim. Someone who's jealous, who doesn't want someone else to have more than them, what are they going to end up asking for? Take out one of my eyes. Punish me. Because you take out one of my eyes, then I'm missing one eye. But my friend is going to be missing two. It's not going to be as bad for me as it is going to be for him. And while that's an extreme example, it doesn't feel so far off. Because someone who's jealous, who wants what someone else has, they can't handle when someone's got more than them. And so this ultimately is the end result of that jealousy. And then what we'll focus on is we're going to talk about good jealousy in a moment, which is going to get into Miriam Rivka's point. But I want to quote to you a piece from the Ohel Midos. This is an excerpt from my personal copy. It's not available online. This is a lesson in taking notes in pencil and not in pen, because I guess when I was like in my Shana Aleph and Yeshiva, I wrote that Odot means accomplishments. It's not entirely accurate in the context of this line it is, but I couldn't erase it because it's written in pen. There's our lesson for always writing in pencil. People who write in pen, I've got a lot of respect for them. They're very brave. I don't know that it's necessarily what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants, but they're for sure very brave. So we see here that if we know that jealousy is a thing, and we know that, like Ravoli points out, like Miriam Rivka points out, that it could even lead people to be in pain, then there's a level of responsibility that we have to make sure that people don't feel that way. And so the Ohel Midos, Moshe Don Kestebaum, says, before you tell your friends about this good thing that happened to you, you got to think, is she going to be happy? Is she going to be excited for me? Or is she going to be jealous of this? You're both applying to the same graduate school. Occupational therapy, my wife went through it, is a very competitive. And particularly if you want to be in the same general city, there aren't that many options. So you find out that you got into the OT program, and your friend, and you don't know if your friend did, your friend might be happy for you, but she also might be jealous because she wants to get into that program, which would be normal. For sure, if the person's lacking in some way. And Lamashal, Ein Ladavar Odos Banav Ubanosav, Bifne Mish Ein Labanim. This will take notes for the future. All of us will get married and have children at the right time, but that time will likely not all be the same. And so you got to be very, very careful to not spend too much time talking about your children with kids who don't have children, or your spouse with people who aren't married. And thank God my wife and I have been together for a long time, but we dated in high school. And so there was a period of time where we knew who we were marrying, which took a lot of pain and struggle that we didn't have to deal with, Baruch Hashem. But we also weren't married a lot longer than some other people. And people talking about what it's like to be married when we wanted to be married was painful. And it took us longer than we anticipated to have children. And there were times when, you know, you go out with people. This happens more often with mommies than it does with daddies. Daddies are very good at ignoring their children when they're not in front of them. But if you go out and there are a bunch of women talking, oftentimes the conversation that's going on around the table is about children. And if you don't have children, it could be very painful. And so you want to be so careful and so thoughtful about this. And it's worth talking about this. And for anyone listening to always think about it, whether it's on the recording or right here, because it's a sensitivity that you have to have, whether it's marriage, whether it's children, whatever the example is. While kinah is something that happens to everyone, we have a responsibility to not let someone be jealous of us when we have more than they do. And yes, you know, we can give them all the different Torah of the past, you know, 25 minutes about how, like, you know, they're not supposed to have it yet and there's going to be a growth opportunity. It's good for them. It's still difficult. As Murphy pointed out, there's a level of tsar involved. We'll leave it there. And now moving on to the good kind of jealousy, because there is a good kind of jealousy. That good jealousy effectively is when I look at someone and say, well, hold on. You know, we say, kinah sovim tar bar chochma, baba basra. There are times when jealousy can be good, because if I see that someone's doing something, it means I can do it also. You can look at it in a positive sense. You know, I see my friend daven so well, I want to daven like her. I see that she knows halakha so well, and I want to know halakha like her. I see that I'm jealous that she lives with such simcha, and I want to emulate that. Those are positive. Those are, I want to be better because I'm surrounded by people who are better. We've talked about that many times, the beauty of a positive chevra. The bad parts we've outlined, you know, when you're jealous of someone's family, jealous of someone's intellectual ability. But there's more to it than that. If you look at your friend who's accomplishing and you aren't inspired to be accomplished, then there's potentially an issue. When you see your friends accomplishing things, that should make you jealous in a kinah sofrim sense, and that I want to be like that. I want to be better also. You can even be a little bit negative, and this negativity might be okay. You could even say, hold on, she just made a siyum on all of Tanakh. Or the example that really came to mind to me was Daf Yomi, but that's not necessarily Shaykh. But she just made a siyum on all of Tanakh, and you know, I sat next to her in class. She's not that smart. She needs things to explain to her more than once. She doesn't focus so well. If she's able to finish Tanakh, I'm definitely able to finish all of Tanakh. And there's a jealousy that's not necessarily saying, how come they were able to, and oh, woe is me, I'm not able to. It's how come they were able to and I haven't yet. When jealousy becomes something that turns into action instead of negative feelings, then it can lead to the positive. The feeling of tsar that Ravovi describes is problematic because the person's not saying, oh, my friends are smarter than I am. I mean, I need to work hard. Or the feeling of tsar that the Talmud has is that he's saying, I must not be very good because I'm not as good as they are. And it's possible that you'll have friends who have stronger kokos than you. It's likely. Hopefully you're surrounded by people who are better than you. But when seeing someone better than you at something makes you feel worse, then we've got a problem. Then that's when kinah really comes up. The best litmus test, it's in here, but we're not going to read inside. It's bolded, Yir Rasha. When there's someone who's a Rasha, someone who's wicked, and they have positive midah. Someone who, we don't even have to say a Rasha. Someone who, in whatever way we emotionally look at things, that we're better than they are, if we're being honest. And of course, we know that no one's better than anyone, but we're better than they are, for whatever reason. But they're, even though on a holistic level, I'm better than she is, if there's like one nakuda where she's better, she smiles more, she's a little bit more patient. Oh, maybe she's more patient because she has less going on, because she doesn't really accomplish so much in her life. While I do a lot of things, I'm very impressive. No, she's more patient. And that's a koach that really, if we're really healthy, we should have kinah for. We should be jealous that she's more patient. And I want to be that patient also. And I want to be all the things that I am, but I also want to be patient. Kinah can be turned toward the positive when you look at someone and say, I want to be as good as that person, rather than trying to clearly break them down. That for sure would not work. And that's the story that we see in paragraph 19, the end of page 4, where Avram Avinu is having a conversation with Mrs. Shelach. And they're schmoozing, and he says, Mrs. Shelach, what do you guys do all the day? Mrs. Shelach is Noach, as you see in the Gemara in Nedarim. And so he says, Mrs. Shelach is Shame. And so he says, Shame, you and your father and your brothers and your wives, you're in the Teva for a year. What was that like? Was it a cruise? Like, you know, was there, you have to pay for drinks, or like they came as part of the package? What was it like? What was going on there? And Shane basically said, we were busy nonstop the whole time. We were doing chesed because we were taking care of all the animals. We probably heard the Rashis and the Midrashim that Noach and his sons were taking care of the animals during the whole Teva year. And so Avraham Avinu says, hold on. If Shane and his family were taking care of the animals for the whole year, and that's really how they were Zocha to leave the ark, to be saved from the whole flood, they're taking care of animals. If I, Avraham, take care of human beings, God's people, God's favorite, that's Alakas Kama Vakama, that's going to be even more important. So what does Avraham Avinu do? He plants an Eshel, and we know from the Midrashim that an Eshel is not just a tree, it's also potentially, and he basically opens up a hostel, and he feeds people, and he gives them Achila, and Shtia, and Lina, and place to sleep. And Avraham Avinu, who is this paragon of Chesed, is inspired by Shane, by Melchizedek, not just because Shane told him, hey, Avraham, you should do this, but because he heard that Shane was doing something positive, and he said, I can do that. I should do that. And so he starts doing it. And so we see that jealousy, on the one hand, can be destructive, but on the other hand, it can build. Miriam Rifka, I suspect you have a question.
Yes, I do. Actually, that's funny. So one of my questions goes back a little bit to when you were saying how sensitive we should be. And I was thinking about that. I was talking that out with a friend recently. We were talking about being sensitive to someone. And at the same time, how do you deal with this? People want you to share with them. And also are you supposed to there's always going to be someone in the room who doesn't have kids, who lost a parent. There's always going to be someone, unfortunately, who faced a tragedy, some of which you'll know and some of which you won't. How are you supposed to navigate that, and how far is it your responsibility versus how much is it their responsibility to also recognize you're not being malicious, you're just being a little bit ignorant?
So to your point, I don't even know if ignorant is the right word, because it might just be the way the world works. You can't, someone who lost a parent 12 years ago, you can't expect that they're never going to hear someone tell a parent story. That being said, I think we ought to explore it a little bit more later on. If someone's thinking about this and they're sensitive to it, then okay, they'll try and navigate the best, and we're not going to be perfect at it. But the most important is really to be at least thoughtful about it. And we can talk more, but let's, for the purpose of time, let's see if we can get to talking about Ratzon a little bit. When it comes to Ratzon, we got to understand, Ratzon, we talk about being passionate. It's the desire. It's the push to want to do something. And that's going to fit in a little bit, although we're going to try and see how it fits in the Gadol. But what's the connection between Ratzon and Kinah? So maybe we could suggest that it's two sides of the same circumstance, because in both instances, you're looking at someone else doing something that maybe you haven't done before. But like we said at the end of Kinah, if seeing someone accomplish something makes you feel bad about yourself, makes you upset that they're able to do something that you can't do, and you will either want to break them down or explain why they're not doing as great as they seem, or you feel bad and you're bitsar, then that's Kinah. That's a problem. When you look at someone who accomplished, someone who did something, and you're like, oh, I want to be like that also, I want to do that also, and that inspires a passion, beautiful. That's where Ratzon fits in. I will tell this isn't the time for the story. Well, we have more time for stories. And so now we're going to look at another piece in Ali Shor. I found this morning because I have a harusa with Howard Karish in Ali Shor, and so I happen to have seen this. We're not going to look at inside, but effectively he says that one of the strongest kokos that a person can have is ratzon. And he quotes a bunch of different mamari chazal. One is en lecha davar hamid bifnei ratzon, which I don't believe is found anywhere in chazal, but for some reason people say that it is. That nothing stands in the way of, if you want it, it'll happen. V'derech adam rotelelech b'malikinoso. The Gemara Makos says if you want to go this direction, God will take you there. And the Gemara Yuma says that if you want to be holier, God's going to help you be holy. If not, then God will be very okay with you falling apart. And so that desire, that push to want to be more, that we see in Ratzon. That's a very, very powerful, powerful force in our lives and in the world. But now we're going to try and appreciate Ratzon a little bit further, a little bit more, because we see right in the middle of page 5, that haratzon zuhi mida tova od, it's a wonderful mida, and then nim says el benefesh nediva v'yikara, and you're only going to find that with a precious soul. Umishi yespo midas haratzon hu mistapek b'chol inyanav kifin mashi yigzor alav haboris ala, v'loyahar acharav. Someone who's got, who has a positive midah of ratzon, in the inverse of kinnah, effectively, isn't asking questions on God. Isn't worrying about whether they have this or they don't have that. They say, whatever God's giving me, that's what I'm supposed to have. This actually sounds like, sort of like the pinnacle of what we've learned over the past 2, 3, 4 weeks, that about being mistopic with what you have. Koman to Avid Rahman al-Tav Avid. He quotes that at some point in the chapter. And so Rutzon on the one hand is this passion, but on the other hand, it's this, you know, I'm okay with where things are. I'm happy with the way that I am, the way the world is. I'm not asking any questions. I'm not pushing to try and be any different than I am. And so what we kind of try need to figure out is, what is Rutzon? Is Rutzon being happy and content? Because that sounds a lot like Simcha. But on the, or is it this passion, this desire to accomplish, to do, like we say, Endevar Harome Lifnei HaRatzon. And for that, we got to try and figure this out. One of the things that seems to indicate that it's more about the about just being happy and content is what we see almost at the very end of the chapter in 25, where it says, we don't actually have to spend that long talking about this midah, kihu kalula b'midah, midas ha'ava ve'asimcha, and confirming what we suggested, that this is basically just an extension of ava, of simcha, like we've learned about, like we've discussed. And so take all those lessons from there about being happy with where you are and with what you've got, and then you've accomplished, then you've fulfilled this midah of ratzon.
But isn't that the opposite of ratzon? Because isn't ratzon trying to go do more and go further? Still recognizing the ava and simcha you have for what you have and for what God gave you, and to feel that hakar satov. But if you're just complacent with where you are, then where's that ratzon gonna push you to do more?
So this is why it's a little bit tricky for us to figure this out. I got willing, we'll have a sharper definition, but we're still journeying to try and get to it, because for sure there's an element of the rutzon as rots, as wanting to go somewhere, a passion like we suggested in the very beginning before we actually started the recording. But there's also an element of rutzon of being happy with the way things are, of being content. And this I'll tell you is one of my biggest professional struggles, of wanting things to be better. I'm not a perfectionist, but I'm an idealist, and I don't envision that things are going to be perfect, but I do expect them to be as good as is realistic, that we put our best foot forward, that we tried as hard as we could. And when that doesn't happen, I get frustrated, I get upset. And it's a professional struggle of mine, because it's almost balancing this rut zone of the passion of wanting to accomplish, wanting to do more, but also being happy with what we did accomplish, with what we did do. But we're going to keep going. We're actually going to skip. This is an excerpt from Sifsei Chaim, Rav Chaim Friedlander, who talks about the bracha of Ritzei, because as we're building a definition of what this Ratzon is, we ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu. We asked a Kadosh Baruch Hu yesterday. We ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu all the time. Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu B'am Chai Yisrael V'Sirasam Elokeinu V'Lokei V'Seinu Ritzei B'Bunu Chaseinu. Ritzei sounds like it's a happiness with a being content with what we've presented. God, we want you to like our tefillos. That's why we put it at the end of the tefillah. And so it sounds like Ritzei is more of that simcha, nachas, ahava that we've been talking about. And so trying to align those two is still a challenge. We've seen the bold here on the bottom of page 5, 6, sorry, that Perkei Avos tells us that we're supposed to, before the bold, that I say ritzono, kiritzonka, kadesh yasa ritzonka, kiritzono, that your will, your desire, your goals should be similar. Should be like that of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, so that a Kodesh Baruch Hu's goals become like your goals, meaning that your passions should be aligned with God's passions. We continue and we say, Ashrei Ish Yareis Hashem b'mitzvosav chafetz ba'od in Tehillim Kufyud Beis, a Pasuk Aleph, that praiseworthy is someone whose desires are mitzvos. And it says, any Omer Elach Chafetz, that your desire is for mitzvos. Rotzel Omer, Shiyasim Adam Chetzo al mitzvosav. You should want to perform mitzvos. Part of this midah of ratzon is training yourself to love Torah mitzvos, to enjoy Torah mitzvos. That for some people, it's not easy. For some people, and just like a midah is in some people stronger, some people's weaker, some people are more inclined toward positivity or toward anger or toward patience. Some people are more inclined toward ratzon in the Torah mitzvos sense, So people have a stronger media toward doing mitzvos. I can tell you that in my life, Baruch Hashem, like, I just always liked Torah mitzvos. Not everyone feels that way. Some people struggle much more, and it's important to remember that it's not doesn't come naturally for everyone. And so part of developing a ratzon is developing a comfort and a desire to do mitzvos. And so now we're focused on ratzon amongst people. And so now is ratzon happiness? Is it passion? It sounds like it's happiness in this context, because we're fluctuating back and forth, trying to find a definition. This has actually been our hardest to define midah. But in paragraph 3, Gimel, we say, Kishadam at Sadek, a rotza ubne adam. When a righteous person is rotza amongst other people, ubne adam rotza bo, and other people are rotza to him or her. Gam hamakom rotza bo. When someone seemingly is likable, when they're gracious, when people are like that, are pleasant with them, but a Kaddish Baruch Hu likes them as well. And even people who don't like you that much are going to end up liking you a little bit like we see with Avram and Avimelech. Moving on to paragraph 4. Dalad, Rei Mai Gila Mordechai Kisharatza Ba'achashverosh. That Achashverosh likes Mordechai, we're coming up to Purim in just over a month. Mordechai's and Achashverosh is a good sign. All of a sudden, these good things happen. Mai Gila Yosef Kisharatza Ba'aparo, and when Paro likes Yosef, all these positive things happen. In Mai Gila Gedola Kazos, Lamisha Rotzim Bo B'nei Adam. And so if people who like you treat you well, Kol Shekein, the Kol Shekein, not just for sure, but double for sure. B'havdil Alfei Avdelos, Misha Rotzibo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if God likes you, you've given God a reason to like you, Kamalos HaGadola, of course you're going to grow up a ton. Of course you're going to have all these opportunities. L'chein Yatriach Adam Atzmo L'asos HaMitzvos V'az Yiratze Bo Hashem Yisbarach. And so some element of this Ratzon, it's the passion, it's the drive, and in some ways, this is the synergy of the two. It's that your passions and your drives should be something that's going to create a pleasantness. It's going to create a sense of shalva, of simcha, of ava, at the very least between you and other people and between you and a Kaddish Baruch Hu. That if your passions and your drives are directed toward positive things, toward Torah mitzvos, then God will like you. And if you're genuinely driven toward Torah mitzvos, other people are going to like you because you're going to be the kind of person who, as we talk about almost every week, who shines, who Asher Bacha is par, someone who is embodying all these positive things that people want. And so then all these good things will happen to you. But it all happens sort of on its own. Now, Malcolm Gladwell in his book, Blink, it shares a fascinating and disturbing and enlightening study all at the same time that doctors who are most likely to face malpractice lawsuits can be ascertained before, and you can figure it out. It's usually not based on their education or even based on their practices. If the way to do it is to listen to the conversations between them and their patients, you don't even have to hear the words they're saying, just the tone and the affect and the warmth expressed. Because when people like their doctors, they don't sue them. He interviewed various lawyers, and the lawyers said, no one ever walked into my office and said, I really, really, really like my doctor so-and-so, but I have to sue them because they messed up. That doesn't happen. People sue doctors they don't like because they feel like they didn't get enough time, they didn't get enough attention. And so when someone likes you, when you're able to express a ratzon towards someone, you're pleasant with them, then you're doing well. Then whether it's a Kaddish Baruch Hu, whether it's other people, then you're in the clear. And to some extent, one of the ways to do that, one of the tools we can use is listening, is Shmia. As you see in Chavav, just the very first four words of that paragraph, Ein ba'olam tov kishmia. There's nothing better than listening. If you want someone to like you, if you want to like someone, listening is the way to go. The best way to come to like someone else and to be pleasant with them is to listen to them. That's the only way you'll find out what there is to appreciate about them. And for sure, people like to talk. They like to share about themselves. And so if you want someone to like you, just ask them lots of questions, and they'll talk a lot, and all of a sudden they'll be like, oh, that guy's great. She's wonderful, and she's so easy to talk to.
It's both of you?
So this particular instance, yes, it's both. If I'm adding the, if you want to like someone more, you should learn more about them. Most people in the world, you're going to meet, we're going a little late, I apologize, although I think that happens every week. Most people who you meet are interesting in some way, shape, or form. And if you just put in the effort, you'll find out something about them that's worthwhile, that's interesting, that you can appreciate. You just have to find the right topic. And you know, we've all like been in situations where you're like at a Shabbos meal, you're at like a whole Shabbos, you're at a wedding, whatever it is, and you need to strike up a conversation. You need to be interested in this person. So find a way to be interested, because if you ask them questions, if you just listen, then people will surprise you at how interesting they can be. And the last piece we're going to do is another piece in Rav Volbi, talking about Ratzon. And this one, I think, fits more along the lines of passion. If we were to define Ratzon based on what we've seen from the Orchot Tzadikim, I think it's fair to say that Ratzon is the synergy of our passions and our goals toward a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and by aligning that our passions and goals toward a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we actually mimela end up becoming people who are more pleasant, who are more likable, whom God likes and who other people like. And to be a person with Ratzon is someone pleasant. I think the official definition that Safari gave us was graciousness, being likable, and ultimately that's where it all leads. But there's one other piece that I think is worth thinking about. And maybe Rav Volbi in the world of Musar is a little bit more passion focused than he is likable and graciousness focused, but he makes an awesome point. He says, Aleinu ledaas emes nora azo. We got to think about something awesome. Masha adam be'emes rotze. What does a person really, really want? Es zehu masi b'chayev, and because that's what you're going to access in your life. U'lehefech, masha adam masi b'chayev, and maybe what we could say sharper is what a person accomplishes in their lives. Zehu agila masha hayev ratzona b'tchila. That really is indicative of what they really wanted, their real ratzon. The atat, but don't be confused. Any sorus peta is of Israel trish l'sha ratzon. You know, a random desire, I really want a Hershey bar, is not your ratzon in your life. And just because you have like a spur of the moment feeling doesn't mean that that's your ratzon. Ropene adam inam yodim klal mahim rotzin. Most people don't know what they want. Ki ratzon hu kach amok, hu misalim mevatam hashitri, and it's holding us off. How would I apologize for wrapping up in a few minutes, okay? Uman orim divrei hagra in Mishlei, and we see what the gra says, that kol darkei adam nimshachim acharei ratzon. Everyone's running after ratzon. I saw Rosh and Haritzon, their very first desire. Ukemo sh'ola ruko b'ratzon harishon heim zokim v'yisharim b'einav. And when they accomplish that, that's what they're focusing on in their lives. But we jump to the end of the second to last line. Mi yodeya lama shoei haratzon harishon. Who knows why that first desire came about? But the more we can take our desires and direct them toward the positive, direct them toward the good, direct them toward the Kodesh Baruch Hu for the things that we want to accomplish in our lives, those are the things that are going to really bring us to happiness and joy in our lives. Those are the things that are going to get us most accomplished. Ratzon is actually one of the, I think, the hardest midos that we've discussed here. Simcha is something we can attain. Ava is something we can attain. Sina is something that we can try and stay away from. Ratzon is really a question of who are you? Are you a pleasant person? Are you an unpleasant person? Are you do you care about people? Do you not care about people? Are you inspired when someone else does something that you haven't been able to accomplish or not? Your Ratzon, I think, Rav Volbi's pointing out, is indicative of really the essence of who you are. And so in that way, it's one of the most powerful midos that we've learned about. It's perhaps the reason why it's coming so late on in the Sefer. We're already halfway through. And so just to review, to wrap up, I hope this was sufficiently informative and concrete enough. But we started out explaining that kina is when we look around and not just, you know, I want that. I want what she can do. I want what she has. But it's even sometimes when I feel bad about myself because I'm not able to do that. That's also a form of kina. But when we appreciate that everything that a Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us in our lives is what we're supposed to have, that losach mode means you shouldn't covet what anyone else has because everything that a Kodesh Baruch Hu gave you is what you're supposed to have, then we don't need to feel badly about ourselves. Then anytime we see someone who has something else in their lives, that's only going to inspire us to accomplish and not necessarily going to make us feel badly. And that more or less rounds up Kina, that it's supposed to inspire us and not put us down. But even so, we still need to be so sensitive when there's a potential for someone else to feel kinah, someone else to be jealous. And so we want to be very thoughtful about that. And when it comes to ratzon, we basically just said it, but ratzon is trying to align my passions toward godliness, toward good, toward being someone who is embodying all the midos that we've learned about over the past number of weeks and months, to be someone who's likable. Because when you're likable, then and people like you, Kadosh Baruch Hu likes you. When your ratzon is aligned with the Kadosh Baruch Hu's ratzon, it's a perfect relationship. When you talk about a marriage, a marriage really is saying that for the rest of my life, my goal is that whatever you want is going to be the most important thing in the world to me, and vice versa. And so if that's the way that you align your marriage, that's the way you align your life in general, then it's not a question of good or bad. It's that I'm just focused on what's important to me. And so ratzon is maybe a meter of priorities. And making sure that your priorities are clear. Not getting upset when other people have things you don't have. Not getting upset when people say things that you don't agree with. Of saying what's the most important thing right now. Now we talked about kas. We talked about all these things that if something's a problem, if you need to show off kavod, you need to show off anger because there's something very important. Then proper ratzon might not be being pleasant. It might mean being harsh and being strict because that's what the moment needs. But generally, If we're well aligned, if we've got a clear understanding of what we want in our lives, then whether someone says this or that, does this or that, it shouldn't make such a difference to us. It's not such a big deal. With that, I think we can wrap up. We could definitely do questions. I pushed off Howard until 9:15, so I'm good for the next 10 minutes.
Can I just... clear? Yeah.
Say no.
Can I ask a question / make a connection?
Yeah.
So isn't Kina also like zealousy? Like Pinchas
yes.
was a zealous.
Yes.
So I guess that's where I'm getting confused with Ratzon then, because he did something because he had that passion, like killing Zimri and Cusby, because he had that passion to serve Hashem and they were doing something wrong. But that's considered Kina, but he used Ratzon to do that. So like, where did the mito, like one is more positive, one is more negative, but where's the line then?
So, first of all, I appreciate you pointing this out, because if you look at the chapter, I don't know, in my head, ideally, I think everyone will be learning the chapters on their own, then we come together to discuss them. I kind of assume that's not happening, but it is worthwhile if you can, even just like to read through the English like once to get like an idea. The last two or three paragraphs of Shar HaKinah talk about Panos, which is spelled exactly the same way as Sarah pointed out. It's the zealotry. And there's a strong connection between kinah and zealotry, between jealousy and zealotry. Also cute that in English they sound the same. And that's what the point that Orchis Tzadikim is making in this chapter, in this paragraph about Avraham Avinu, that he almost had a kinah. He developed a zealotry for chesed based on what he heard about what Shem and Mr. Shelach were doing, / Mr. Shelach did in the Teva. When you are jealous for the sake of someone else or something else, that's called zealotry. If Pinchas, in the case of Zimri and Cusby, is jealous for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because there's a Chilul Hashem happening, and he's jealous that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not as great as he should be, that manifests itself as zealotry. And in some ways, Kanaos is the bridge between Kinah and Ratzon. Ordinarily, you know, Ava and Simcha, Ava and Sina are two ends of one spectrum. I don't know that we would say that Kina and Ratzon are two ends of one spectrum, but they are probably further apart than they are together. But that middle ground, I think you pointed out beautifully, is exactly where Kina lies, Kanaos lies, where zealotry lies. Because when I see something and it inspires me that I have to do something, and it's not for me, it's not because I care about it, it's because someone else cares about it. That's what we call kanaos. That we call zealotry. Make sense? Awesome. What else we got? Remember, could we sufficiently explain or explore the pain that someone feels when they're jealous?
Yes, we did did we solve the problem that no one can solve about how to sensitively go about these things? Not really. I guess it just takes the mindfulness and the awareness of how we present certain things. I feel like to give a personal example, although we're being recorded, so like don't let this go in.
Obviously. Well, we can turn off our recording. But
yeah, can we do that? I'll just say
this before we turn off our recording, although we'll probably cut out all of our questions. It requires a tremendous amount of sensitivity, and if the best thing a person can ever do is ask Shilas. Too many times people spend time asking Shilas about whether or not something in your kitchen is kosher. They don't ask Shilas about midos. And halavai, people would ask more midos Shilas. You have a Shila, call up a rabbi, call up whomever, even ask a friend, just trying to get someone else's input when it comes to midos as well. That would be wonderful. But now, Miriam Rivka, what do you want to say?